Dharma kshetre kurukshetre samaveta yuyutsava mamaka pandavaschaiva kimakurvatra sanjaya. He wants to know what my sons and the sons of Pandu are doing on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, right? And so, keyword is mama. Mamaka. What are my sons and the sons? So he makes a distinction between his sons and the sons of Pandu. And this is the nature of material consciousness. I think in terms of I, me, and mine. And I have a vested interest in those things that are mine, and all the other things can all go to hell. Everything else. This is duality thinking. Whereas somebody who's in Krishna consciousness is described later in the Bhagavad Gita, Vidyavinaya sampani brahmane gavihastini shunichaiva shupakecha pundita samadarshina. Krishna says that a pundit, the learned person, is not somebody on CNN who knows what's going on with the stock market. A pundit is somebody who knows and sees that all living entities are spiritual parts and parcels of Krishna, and therefore he or she sees equally. Vakanimaska. Ego? Hambu? Should we have translation? And so he's asking Sanjaya. Sanjaya was a disciple of Vyasadeva, and he had a blessing from Vyas that he could see everything that's going on in the battlefield of Kurukshetra in his heart, just like he was watching television. Not so hard to understand now that we have smartphones, because you can connect with somebody on the other side of the world and look through the smartphone. It's just technology. So that kind of technology was available without machines back then. And he had that power to see. And therefore he was explaining to Dhritarashtra, because he was a servant of Dhritarashtra. And so he was telling him what's going on in the battlefield. So questions and answers are going on there. What other questions and answers take place in the Bhagavad Gita? Honyaku. Kudasai. What other questions are there in the Bhagavad Gita, and who asked them? Who is asking question about Karma Yoga? Arjuna is asking question of whom? Arjuna is asking questions of Krishna. Does Krishna answer? There you have it. There's the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is asking questions. Arjuna is asking questions, and then Krishna answers. Does Krishna ask any questions? Can you think of any? Does Krishna ask Arjuna anything? How has this weakness of heart come upon you, he asks. Because in the first chapter, Arjuna is talking about how he doesn't want to fight. And he has this weakness of heart. Although he's a warrior, he doesn't want to do his duty. He wants to walk away. Honyaku. Nitai-san.
Hi. まあ、アルジナは戦場でその義務として戦わなければならなかった。義務で。
So he gives a lot of good reasons why he shouldn't fight, right? What reasons does Arjuna give that he shouldn't fight in the battle for Kurukshetra, even though it's his duty?
He had a lot of respect for his teachers and his elders, and he was hesitant to fight against them because of them being gurus or uncles.
Nice, good points. Itai, san? Yeah, because respect for his gurus, his teachers, his elder family members. He didn't want to fight with them. Yes?
Many women will become widow and many children will be like
that. So if he kills all these men, then the women will become widows? And then the children will turn out bad. Any other reasons?
He was also actually thinking about what the society would become after the war. Mm-hmm. Like what the consequences which would be on the society. Like as she said, you know, many men would be killed, so that children would become orphaned, or you know, wives would become widows, or so he was thinking about whether the society would be in a mess, or you know, the religious principles would be affected.
Correct. Nice. And who would offer the oblations for the forefathers and things like that? How would the religious system go on and so forth? And then in the beginning of the second chapter, Arjuna says that I don't know what to do. I give up. He says that I'm overwhelmed. And I can't figure out what is my duty, what is not my duty. So what does he do in that case, when he can't figure out what is his duty and what is not his duty? He surrenders? Who does he surrender to?
Krishna.
What does he say when he surrenders?
He's saying that he become my spiritual master and he's guiding me.
Says, I don't know what my duty is. I'm completely lost. You please instruct me.
Right?
Anybody ever have a situation in their life where they didn't know what to do? Yes or yes? Yeah, life is can be very confusing, right? But it looks like both decisions are wrong. You do this, like they say, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. Whatever you do, it looks like it's a bit hard decision to make, right? So very difficult. So we require guidance. We have to take guidance from a higher authority. We can't go by our own mental concoction about what to do and what not to do. And once we've aligned ourselves, does Krishna accept Arjuna's proposal that he become his spiritual master?
Yes.
He accepts? You sure? What does he say when Arjuna tells him, please instruct me? What's the first thing that Krishna tells Arjuna? Who's that? He said, you're speaking learned words. You think you're speaking learned words, but you're just a fool. Asochanan masochastvam pragnavaram shtrabhashashi gatasum agatasum scha nanu sochandi pandita. So he said, you're speaking as if you're a learned person. You're saying, oh, there's this principle, there's that principle. He said, but you're just a fool. You don't know anything. So Krishna first, he chastises him, calls him a fool. So, look at chapter 2, text 11. This is first what Krishna says to Arjuna when Arjuna approaches him and says, please be my spiritual master. So I'll say the word and then you repeat. You ready? Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said. Honyaku. Asochyan. Not worthy of lamentation. Andasochaha. You are lamenting. Tvam. You. Pragnavadan. Learned talks. Cha. Also. Bhashase. Speaking. Gata, lost. Asun, life. Agata,
not past.
Asun, life. Cha, also. Na, never. Anusochanti, lament. Panditaha, the learned. The Supreme Personality of God had said, while speaking learned words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor the dead. So here's the purport. The Lord at once took the position of the teacher. Jai Shri Shri Radha Govinda Ji Ki Jai. The Lord at once took the position of the teacher and chastised the student, calling him indirectly a fool. You are talking like a learned man, but you do not know that one who is learned, one who knows what is body and what is soul, does not lament for any stage of the body, neither in the living nor in the dead condition. As explained in later chapters, it will be clear that knowledge means to know matter and spirit and the controller of both. Arjuna argued that religious principles should be given more importance than politics or sociology but he did not know that knowledge of matter, soul, and the supreme is even more important than religious formularies. And because he was lacking in that knowledge, he should not have posed himself as a very learned man. As he did not happen to be a very learned man, he was consequently lamenting for something which was unworthy of lamentation. The body is born and is destined to be vanquished today or tomorrow. Therefore, the body is not as important as the soul. One who knows this is actually learned, and for him there is no cause for lamentation regardless of the condition of the material body. So asocha. Asocha means to lament. So asocha nan vasocha stvang prakabaram shtabashe. He said, Krishna says to Arjuna, you're lamenting for that which is not meant to be lamented about. And your language is very foolish. So then Krishna gives Arjuna clear knowledge about the soul. He says that we've always existed, we always will exist, and we are always eternally individuals. He describes how the soul can't be killed by any weapon, or burned by fire, or dried up by the wind. And this is something people do not know. And not knowing this is called ignorance. Just like when somebody dies, everyone says, oh, he's gone, and they cry. Once there was a great king named Suyogya. He died on the battlefield. When he was dying, he bit his lip to show his prowess. Bravery. And the queens of the king came and they grabbed to his clothes and they were crying and crying and crying and crying. They said, the king is dead, the king is gone. And the time was coming for the king's body to be burned. But they wouldn't let go. Satyadeva Prabhu told me that this used to happen when he was a paramedic. He would go to a call and then he would find that the person was dead. And the family members were holding onto the body even though it was stiff already. And he would take the test and say that they're dead, now they're dead, they're gone. And they would say, no, not gone, they're still okay. And they would, one body, they said they were taking tiger balm. You know this tiger balm?
Yeah.
It's very hot. So they were rubbing all over the body and say, see, no, it's okay, they're not dead. Queens were like that. They were holding Yamaraj heard this crying from the queens. So he came to that battlefield where the queens were crying, but he came in the form of a little boy, 5 years old. And he approached them and said, "Why are you crying?" And they said, "The king, our husband, is dead and gone." And he said, "I don't understand. You're not speaking sense." He said, "He's right here. Look, see right here, he's here." And they said, "Little boy, you don't understand. He's dead. He's gone." He said, "No, you don't understand. He has the same eyes, same ears, same hands and feet, same hair is there. How can you say the king is gone? He's right there." And the queen said, "Who are you, little boy?" And he said, "I'm Yamaraj. I'm come to teach you something you don't know." He said, "Now you're lamenting and crying for the king, saying he's gone, but you never saw the king." The soul is beyond our vision. It's not material. We can't see it with our material eyes. But the soul is the substantial part of the body. Some people think that matter is actual substance, but spirit is something that's not very stable. It's indescript. They think that matter is stable, but spirit is something that is not stable. It's mythology. It's something that you imagine. But actually, the opposite is true. The soul is the proprietor of the body, and without the soul, immediately the body starts to fall apart. When the soul leaves the body, immediately the body starts to deteriorate. Yes. A few hours later, it will become stiff, and then it will begin to rot. Relatives, they take the body and they put on a palanquin and they go around Ram Nam Satyahe, and everyone's crying. But this is ignorance. Krishna says here, a wise person doesn't lament because nobody's died. He's only moved from one position to another. Soul is never born and the soul never dies. Only temporarily in this body, living for a few years. And when he leaves the body, he goes to the next destination. So this is really real knowledge. But this nobody knows. And nobody talks about it. If you talk about this, people say, I can't understand. I don't know. Or they're not interested. The topic of death is not very popular. If you go for a holiday to meet with your family, and they say, "What should we talk about?" talk about death. Let's talk about the movies and television. But a learned person actually talks about this subject to understand what is the real important aspect of life. That's the soul. So just as soon as Krishna begins speaking, he gives perfect knowledge. And for a soul that's suffering in this material world, lamenting, as Arjuna was lamenting, for so many lost relatives, for the fact that he's going to lose his life, when he hears this knowledge, he gets immediate relief to understand, I shouldn't lament, I'm not this body. Questions are the answer. Yes. Hey, Saptarishi, emotion, nanto imaska. Hey, Gayatri Yoshite imaska. Like when you feel upset, like somebody dies, and then you feel very sad, you feel like heavy heart, this means emotion. Kanjotiki. Okay? So it's not that a devotee doesn't have kanjotiki. Kanjotiki. To feel, because we're living entities, means we're sentient, it means we have senses, it means we feel. If a relative dies, the feeling is there naturally. If your mother dies, you'll feel some sadness. circumstances in life, when we experience these ups and downs, we have to take shelter of Krishna's instructions. And even sometimes that may not even help. Sometimes even that doesn't help completely. So then we have to go to the devotee of Krishna and take shelter of the devotee who might have realization of Krishna's instructions. Just like Yudhishthira, after the battle of Kurukshetra, he was very upset. Kanjoteki. And it was very difficult for him to give up his grief. So Krishna took him to meet Bhishma Dev. Bhishma was lying on the battlefield in a bed of arrows. But he was such a great soul that he wasn't disturbed by that situation. Dave is a Mahajan. He is one of the great souls. And so Krishna made Bhishmadeva speak to Yudhishthira so Yudhishthira could give up his grief. So in our life, we must have these connections to Krishna's instructions. You said, how do we fortify ourselves? How do we prepare ourselves? We must have, first of all, we must develop spiritual strength. This is very important. In the 8th chapter of the Gita, Krishna says, Prayana kale manasachalena bhaktya yukto yoga padena chaiva bruvar madhye pranavadesha samyaksatam param purusham upaiti divyam. At a time of death, one has to be able to fix one's mind. And he said this comes from yoga balena. Everyone say yoga balena. Yoga balena. Yoga balena. Now say it with a little more force. Yoga balena.
Yoga balena.
Now raise your hand like this, your fist here. Yoga balena.
Yoga balena.
Yeah, you have to have yoga balena. It means you have to have strength that comes from yoga. It means, as Prabhupada explains in his purport in the 8th chapter, that every day, during the uptime, downtime, you have to continue practicing yoga. When you practice every day during the course of your life, then at the time of death, you'll have this kind of strength. And the way, best way to do this is to have a regular system of practice every day. In California, where I live, I have a garden. And in my garden, I set up a very complex watering system. It has hoses running underground all throughout the whole garden. And then from each hose, I put a smaller hose connected to the big hose, and it goes to each one of the plants in the garden. So each one has its own individual little hose. And on the end of each little hose, there's a special little nozzle, and they're color-coded. This is each color shows how much water comes out from the nozzle. So some plants like more water, some plants like less. So according to the plant, I put a little nozzle and I put it right by the root of the plant. And then the whole system is connected to a box on the side of the house. And that box has an electric timer. So I set the timer so that every part of the garden gets the right amount of water every day. So now I'm here in Japan, but my garden is being watered right now. And now I had growing before I left tomato, I have the kale, and I have lots of flowers. Marigold flowers are growing this time of year, and some various kinds of vegetables, strawberries, a lot of strawberries. So now when I go back after 2 weeks, they're going to be much bigger. Because they're automatically getting water. So you have to hook up these watering devices in your own life. It takes a little work at first to lay down all the hoses and connect all the little tubes. But if you do that, and you make sure that you, every day you're automatically getting this spiritual water, then you'll begin to develop strength over time. In there's a book called The Richest Man in Babylon. I read this book many years ago. It teaches you how to become wealthy. If anybody wants to know how to become wealthy, you just have to read this book. It's called The Richest Man in Babylon. Yes. So, it teaches some basic principle of how to become rich. Should I say what it is? No? Not interested, right? Okay. One principle is, it has a several principles, but I'll tell you the most important one. It is called pay yourself first. Pay yourself first. Pay yourself. Pay. So when you live in a house or an apartment or, and you work outside, you get a lot of envelopes in the mail. ]99.9% of the time they're asking you for money. They say, you pay me. Electric bill, water bill, insurance bill, tax bill, food bill, bill, every kind of bill you have to pay everybody. The material world is a very expensive place to live. Everybody wants you to pay something. And then there's unexpected bills also. Not the regular ones, but something happens, the pipe breaks, you have to pay for that. Now, if you work and you have an income, you have a certain amount of money that comes in every month. Most people, they take that money and they pay all their bills. And after paying all the bills, they look around and they see if there's any money left. And usually there's either no money left or they still owe more money. And so they'll go for 10 years like this, 20 years, 30 years, 40 or 50 years. And when they get old, they realize I don't have anything, I'm broke, because I've always just been paying my bills. So the simple principle is that before you pay all the other bills, you have to pay yourself. So let's say you make $1,000 a month from your job. And let's say your expenses are $1,000 a month. So you never make any money. And so now you have two choices. You can either make a little more or you can spend a little less. But the principle is you have to pay yourself at least 10% of your income every month, no matter what. And you can't touch that money for anything. It doesn't matter if there's a tsunami, you still can't touch the money. And you have to put that money away in an investment, but that's a whole other topic. And if someone, even if they have a small income, if they put away 10% every month, they never touch it, they put it into a fairly decent investment, over 30 years, they become rich. You're going to be 30 years older in 30 years anyway. So if you have the system in place, like the watering system automatic, then you become rich, or your plants grow and they become very healthy. So this works in spiritual life also. You have to pay yourself first. Everyone has 24 hours in a day. Most people have two arms, two legs, same thing. Same, everything. It's just a matter of how you pay yourself first. So you have to set up a system so that before you take care of anyone else or anything else, you make sure you take your spiritual nourishment during the day.
...10%
of your day you have to put away every day to, if you want super strength, super yoga balena. Before you consider anything or anyone else, you have to pay yourself first and make sure that you're strong. Maybe someone will say, oh, this sounds very selfish. What about your children? What about your husband? Well, on the airplane, they tell you during the announcements, in case of emergency, when the mask comes down for oxygen, and your little child sitting next to you, who do you put the mask on first, your child or yourself? You put it on yourself. Because if you're dead, you can't help your child. And Satyadeva Prabhu told me, when he went to paramedic school, the first lesson they taught is that a dead paramedic can't save anybody. So before you go in and try to rescue someone else, you have to make sure that you yourself are not going to get killed in the accident area. So one thing is you have to chant really good rounds every day. you should try to get something from your rounds every day. Don't be satisfied just to finish your rounds. You should chant your rounds thinking, I have to get something from this. Don't walk away empty-handed. When you chant, chant with your hand out and say, Krishna, I'm broke, I'm destitute, I'm poor, please help me, please give me something. When you go to some countries, you'll notice that people beg. In America, a lot of people beg these days. They beg, they please give me something, I'm poor. Did you ever see these people? Does anybody beg in Japan? Not so much. America people beg. They hold up a sign at intersections, say, homeless, help me, please. I have no money, give me something. Right? Sometimes here. In India, anybody beg? Maybe, right? Maybe I've seen someone, a few people begging in India. Yeah? They follow you for a mile, you know? And they keep begging. And then, do people give money? Does somebody give them something? Yes or yes?
Yes.
Correct. Because when you beg, you get. Eventually, someone will give. So if you beg from Krishna, he'll also give. You can get really powerful realization chanting the holy name if you beg. Rather than just chant to finish this many rounds or complete, if you actually beg from your, like you're starving and you have to have something, if you cry and beg and hold out your hand while you're chanting, then Krishna can give you something. And if Krishna gives you one little penny, then you become a rich person. You get that yoga balena, that strength. And even if you don't get anything, you should think, tomorrow I'm going to try again. Krishna, please, you have to give me. But if you think I'm okay, I'm alright, I'll just chant just to finish, or maybe I won't chant, then why would Krishna give you anything if you don't ask? Why would you get? And if you're already satisfied with what you have, how would you get any more? My Madanga teacher told me, he said, when people practice, they start to learn the Madanga, and then they reach a certain level and they think, oh, I'm pretty good. And then they think, I'm finished, I've reached the top. So he said, if you think that you're finished, you're finished. The same thing in devotional service. You think that I'm on a pretty high level now, I'm okay. If you're okay, why would Krishna give you anything more? So you have to chant very, very strong rounds every day. This is a secret. And you should also read one chapter of Bhagavad Gita a day. That means you should at least recite all the Sanskrit or at least all the English translation. If you do this every day without fail, you become a devotee of the Bhagavad Gita. Other people are doing so many things, watching television, listening to stupid things on the radio.
But if you say, no, I have to do my Bhagavad Gita, it takes you 5 minutes, maybe 15 at the top. That's not much time out of 24 hours. But if you do it every day, you become a sadhu. You become a pundit. It's a small price to pay. And the other thing is, on your smartphone, on your iPhone, which we now know is an iPhone because we recognize the ring, you should load the lectures. Like, there's Prabhupada lectures, you can get all of the lectures. There's also a recitation of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Nectar Devotion. All those books are available on recorded media. When you're cooking, when you're doing something around the house, you should have the lecture going. You should be addicted to that sound vibration. That if it goes quiet, you should feel a little anxious. So in this way, every day you should have your quota that you fulfill of your spiritual practice. And even at first, if you can't do a large amount, you should do a small amount in a regular way. And from there it will grow, and then you'll get the spiritual strength. And then your life becomes very productive when you have spiritual strength. And then when you have overflow of these things you're realizing, then your main business in life becomes teaching about Bhagavad Gita. That's the best work in the universe. To be able to speak for Krishna. Two ideas, practical things. Other questions? Questions are the answer. If you don't have a question, yes.
Yeah, cool. Oh, yeah.
終わりましたか? Class is over 12:30? Yes. TBC. To be continued. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai Go Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Go Premanande Haribo Jai Shri Shri Radha Govinda Ji Ki Jai